Well, hello there, and may I say a very happy new year. That's 2012. Is it really that time already? Yes, how time flies. Well, I'm afraid I had an absolutely superb new year. I hope you did too. So, without repeating myself, I'm going to wish you all a very happy new year from us all here at the Archaeology Podcast News. Now, I was going to bring you some bloopers from the year, but in fact, I used them up on our 200th anniversary. So, I'm going to try and do something incredibly dangerous just now. Flying by the seat of my pants, this is going to be a sort of what we call a semi-live performance. I'm not going to stop. If I make any mistakes, if anything happens around me, then you will be hearing it. So, you will hopefully have lots of bloopers in the process of this programme. Well, without further ado, let's get back to the normal process itself, and if I can say welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website, and all stories have been collected from various sources. And to view details on these story and the source, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So what do we have for this week? Well, we've got stargazing, an Irish stone circle, 2,000-year-old cave paintings found in Mexico, and the mystery of the Fluchtfead. You're actually going to learn how to sort of actually pronounce that one as well in Ireland. Now we've got a new German-Israeli centre of human evolution and how that's going to work. And a very sad story, I'm afraid. It's China's tomb raiders. They are having a massive impact upon the cultural heritage of that country. We've got more ancient cave paintings, this time found in Peru. And now to Yorkshire, where I'm afraid hikers and bikers, unintentionally quite often, are threatening ancient sites. Megalithic burial urns are excavated in southern India. And then, rather unusual on this, human remains from 450 BCE are unearthed in a Nepalese cave. There's an ancient burial chamber on Dartmoor, that's in England, getting itself restored back to its original shape. And then this one, I never knew what to call this actually. Is it a pendant found in an open-air dig in Spain? Or is it a sharpening tool with a hole at one end? Well, you decide anyway when we get there. Now we've got, I love stories like this, the oldest representation of the Tower of Babel. Or is it? And then we finish off with something which, again, is very close to my heart just now. A better view of Mississippi Indian mounds. Well, astronomers from Armagh University, Armagh Observatory, there's your first blooper, and archaeologists from the Northern Ireland Environment Agency will be hosting the Stargazing Live Universe Awareness Activity at the fascinating Beachmore Stone Circles near Cookston. That's in Northern Ireland, regarded as the best dark sky site in the region. The event, which is an international astronomy outreach programme founded by the European Community, it was going to be held on Wednesday the 18th of January 2012. So hopefully you'll have heard of this before then. Mark Bailey, director of the observatory, said that astronomy captures the imagination of children young and old, as well as others who are young at heart. I think that's me he's talking about as well. A view of the stars and of our Milky Way on a clear night from a dark sky site, such as Beachmore, can be an awe-inspiring, sometimes life-changing experience. Living history and reenactors will greet people and demonstrate Bronze Age weapons and artifacts technology, including agriculture, highlighting the possible reasons for the need to use astronomy and the science behind the circle's original purpose. There'll also be opportunities to view the stones at sunset and observe the bright planets such as Venus and Jupiter, both visible after sunset. If the weather's bad, as there will be an alternative living history programme, a slideshow illustrating the night sky from the site as well. Yeah, I have to confess, I do live in a place where you can see the most beautiful skies. That's the joy of not living in a city. But anyway, enough about me again. Now across to Mexico, which also has amazing skies. Mexican archaeologists found over 3,000 cave paintings, some of them almost 2,000 years old, in the central Mexican state of Guanajuato. The discoveries were made between August and October 2011, but were not announced until specialists confirmed their antiquity and completed initial analysis. The paintings came to light through the Rupestrow Art Project of the Victoria River Basin, which includes semi-desert regions in the states of Querato and I've got to unfortunately say that, yes, you're going to have your definite first big blooper, is a group of chickens have actually just wandered into the recording studio and have started clucking. So if you do hear any clucking in the background, it's just due to the fact that I live in a farm sty, a farmyard. Let's return to the story. The paintings came to light through the Rupestrow Art Project of the Victoria River Basin, which includes semi-desert regions in the states of Querétaro and Guanajuato. The pictographs were found at 40 rock sites. The oldest images seem to refer to rites of passage, healing, prayers for rain and mountain worship, and were created by hunter-gatherer societies that occupied the area during the first centuries CE. These paintings, with yellow, red and black as the predominating colours, generally represent human figures, often in hunting and battle scenes, carrying bows and arrows. There's a great diversity of animals that appear, as well as radiating circles that probably represent the sun. The archaeologists claim the hunter-gatherers who created images on rock faces were doing more than just leaving an imprint of their collective memory of historic, climatic and ritual occurrences. They painted the exposed fronts and sheltered backs of boulders as points of contact between the material and the spiritual world. These new discoveries are added to more than 70 rock art locations discovered in Guanajuato since the late 1980s. The oldest cave art documented in Mexico so far is in Baja California and dates back some 7,400 years. Now, I bet you've always wondered how to pronounce this. Well, it looks like Fulacht Fiad, but in fact it's pronounced Fulacht Fiad. And these things exist all around Ireland and throughout the United Kingdom, but archaeologists, that's me included, have yet to agree upon their actual purpose. There's nearly 6,000 recorded Fulacht Fiad sites dotted around Ireland alone. Today they appear as horseshoe-shaped mounds of soil and rocks surrounding a depression in the ground. Although commonplace and easy to identify, they always remain enigmatic. Various theories have been put forward, but a lack of consistent artefacts associated with any of the proposed activities at the sites continues to obscure their purpose. Fulacht Fiad sites typically date to the Middle Bronze Age, that's 1800 BCE. The structures are usually found alone, but also appear in groups of 2 to 6, as close as 5 metres or so from one another. Most sites are somewhat isolated, with only a few having been found as part of a permanent settlement, so says Emer Denny, an Irish archaeologist with the Railway Procurement Agency in Dublin who studies them. It was convenient to locate these sites close to wet and damp areas which would not have been suitable for habitation. Wetland locations allowed the troughs to be self-filling, either because they were situated below the water table or because they were built directly above a spring. Most are roughly rectangular and average 1.5 metres in length, 1.2 in width and 0.6 in depth. Most that have been excavated are unlined, but roughly 30% are lined. These were clay, wood or stone slabs. I remember some of these as well. Now, surrounding the troughs are U-shaped mounds of stones which average roughly 1 metre high but can reach more than 2 metres, composed of sandstone or limestone rock chunks. Neither rock type is typically found close to Fulacht Fiad sites, indicating that the people chose the stones deliberately. John Waddell, the Emeritus Professor of Archaeology at the National University of Ireland in Galway, says you can be absolutely sure it was used for boiling water. In fact, that's the only thing that we can all agree on. Denny explains how the stones that were heated and shattered during the process were then discarded nearby, gradually accumulating to form the mound surrounding the trough. In Gaelic, Fulacht means cavity, though as interpreted through Irish literature, it can also mean a cooking site. Fiadh means wild deer, and until recently, the conventional wisdom has been that the Fulacht Fiadh was used for cooking. In the UK, they're known simply as burnt mounds. But Declan Moore and fellow archaeologist Billy Quinn were the latest to practice experimental archaeology with them. Quinn's insight, perhaps the mysterious Irish archaeological structures were used as ancient brewing sites. Moore and Quinn decided to make their own Fuilleadh brew, producing around 100 litres of copper-coloured ale with a smoky flavour. To support their theory, Moore and Quinn point to the discovery of grinding stones at Fuilleadh sites in both Ireland and the United Kingdom, as well as confirmed findings of traces of cereal grain and wheat near a Bronze Age wooden trough at a site in Wales back in 2009. So Quinn says, overall, the Fuilleadh may have indeed been multifunctional, something like our modern kitchen sink, used for many different purposes. What a brilliant way to get round to the problem that none of us archaeologists can actually agree. Multifunctional sites. Excellent news. Well, when it comes to human evolution, Europe and Near East are crucial places. Europe has the first cave art, and the Near East seems to have the first sightings of modern humans out of Africa. Now, a leading scientific body, the Munich-based Max Planck Society, is teaming up with Israel's Weizmann Institute of Science to create a joint centre devoted to studying archaeology and human evolution, to be based in both Rehovot in Israel and Leipzig in Germany. On the 11th of January, Max Planck President Peter Grus and Daniel Zajfman, President of the Weizmann Institute in Rehovot, will sign a contract to create this new centre, worth about 5 million euros over the next 5 years. The new Max Planck Weizmann Centre for Integrative Archaeology and Anthropology, SNAPI, as it will be called, actually won't have a building though. Instead, the money will be funding up to 10 postdoctorate or graduate students in each city. We'll also support equipment and infrastructure such as the rental of additional lab space in Leipzig and the kitting out of existing space at the Weizmann Institute. The centre will focus on key questions such as the timing of cultural change over the past tens of thousands of years and the nature of the coexistence between Neanderthals and modern humans. But Hoogland says no decisions have been made about specific projects yet. Get your hands up there and see if you can get into this one right early on. In addition to CT scanning of bones and teeth and radiocarbon dating of previously excavated materials, researchers hope to launch new archaeological digs in perhaps Europe or even the Near East. Now, China's extraordinary historical treasures are under threat from increasingly aggressive and sophisticated tomb raiders. The thieves use dynamite and even bulldozers to break into the deepest chambers and night vision goggles and oxygen canisters to search them. The size and value of the relics demonstrates the audacity of the raiders. Chinese authorities last year recovered a 27-ton sarcophagus that had been stolen from Xi'an and shipped all the way to the USA. Professor Wai Zheng, an archaeologist at Peking University, commented that before, China had large numbers of these ancient tombs, and although it was depressing to see a tomb raided, it was still possible to run into similar ones in the future. Nowadays, though, many have already been destroyed, and archaeologists are now just simply chasing after what's left behind after the tomb raiders. With thousands of sites, many in remote locations, the scope of China's heritage poses a particular challenge. The problem became worse as China's economy opened up, with domestic and international collectors creating a huge market for thieves. One researcher estimated that 100,000 people were involved in the trade nationally. Lao Jiahe of the Shaanxi Provincial Cultural Relics Bureau told China Daily, "If we don't take immediate and effective steps to protect these artefacts, there will be none left to protect in 10 years. Police have already stepped up their campaigns against the criminals, and government is devoting extra resources to protecting sites and tracing offenders. This year, it set up a national information centre to tackle such crimes." Well, all we can do is hope that when we're reporting on this next year, 2013, not that far away, only a year. In fact, that's if we're still here after the Maya collapse. Hopefully, we will be reporting that there has been a drop in this type of crime. Now, the president of the Cave Art Peruvian Association reported the finding of cave paintings depicting humans, animals and geometric figures from 8 to 12,000 years old in the province of Churcampa, located in Peru's Centro Huacavelica region. Six cave paintings were identified in a 20-metre stone wall which depicts humans in hunting positions. The cave is located at some 3,200 metres above the sea level in the Torangana mountain range. The quilcas, which is a native name of this art form, are painted in red, white and black and are believed to be 8 to 12,000 years old. The finding confirmed the great cognitive development of ancient Peru and establishes a reference its pictorial tradition. Most important is the variation and extension of the motifs and the scenes. Well, basically translated, it's we're getting to see what people were thinking 12,000 years ago. Now, to Yorkshire, in the north of England. Ancient burial mounds and monuments dating back to the Bronze Age in the Yorkshire's national parks are at risk of being lost forever amid a surge in popularity of walking and mountain biking. National park chiefs have warned that a worrying ignorance has seen the monuments disturbed by ramblers, and there's even been instances of mountain bikers using ancient burial mounds as impromptu jumps. There are 839 scheduled monuments within the confines of the North York Moors National Park. Along with them are standing stones and burial mounds, and around a fifth of those within the national park have been given a high at-risk rating. The North York Moors National Park Authority Senior Archaeological Conservation Officer, that's Graham Lee to you and me, said anyone caught damaging scheduled monuments could, in theory, face a criminal prosecution. One of the biggest problems is people taking stones from the ancient sites to build up piles of cairns nearby. There's also been cases where burial mounds near bridleways have been ridden over by mountain bikers unaware of the historical importance of the raised ground on their revised route. Mr. Lee said they've been attempting for many years to highlight the importance of the scheduled monuments on the national park, but people are just simply not aware of what they are disturbing. They're unwittingly responsible for an awful lot of damage, and the issue is proving extremely hard to crack. Where they're getting more and more people into the national parks who are taking out walking and mountain biking, which is great, but there's an ignorance about the countryside of what they're actually going over. The North York Moors National Park Authority has joined forces with English Heritage to try and protect the scheduled ancient monuments in the area. A management scheme to carry out vital restoration work to dozens of the monuments began in 2009 and has now been extended until 2015 after another £100,000 of funding was secured. However, leading walking and mountain bike organisations have stressed that every effort is being made to ensure their members are fully aware of the need to preserve the countryside and its ancient heritage. Mark McClure, chairman of the UK branch of the International Mountain Biking Association, said, "We would always urge mountain bikers to stick to designated tracks to avoid causing any damage, especially to scheduled monuments." It's one of these tricky issues here, and in a way, it is education. People are not doing it just so they can damage these mounds, but somehow they have to be made aware of why they shouldn't and why they should be protecting it. Whether that is increased interpretation before they get up there, you don't really want the place littered and boards, but somehow reaching out to these people so that they're the ones that actually protect it. And in fact, it makes their walk or their mountain biking a little bit more enjoyable as they go past these places. Anyway, enough said from me. Let's head off to India, where a burial urn, locally known as a Nanangadi, and believed to date back to the Megalithic period, which is 1500 BCE to 100 CE, was recently excavated from a construction site near Ramakkalmedu in Kerala in India. The Nanangadi is about a metre high. The top of the urn is covered with a round stone slab, and two small pots and a bowl have been found in and near the urn itself. Within the urn, human bones were found. The red and black pottery shows Dravidian expansion into South India. It's also the first that human bone has been found within a Nanangadi. These remains will allow scientists to actually properly date the burial urn. The local administration has drawn up a project called Discovering Idukki. It's an annual in its annual budget to protect the other megalithic site and start studies of those monuments. It also plans to open a megalithic museum at the district headquarters for the collection and preservation of artefacts just like this Nanangadi pot, which are found and excavated in the area. Now, spooky. Experts digging into the Brak cave in Lower Mustang, which is in Nepal, have unearthed new clues which could potentially unravel a significant part of Nepalese history dating back to 450 BCE. A team of experts, including archaeologists from the Department of Archaeology, who have been studying two unique sets of human remains recovered from Mehbrak Cave, say features of the corpses are drawing them closer to the discovery of this peculiar prehistoric culture. They say the human remains proved to be that of a mother and an infant dating back to 450 BCE. They were recovered in what looked like a sleeping posture, where the mother seems to be protecting her infant. Interestingly, though, they talk about that the body of the infant was found complete, even with a layer of skin covering the infant's bones. Finding a human body as old as this, 2,600 years, in such a remarkable state of preservation, challenges conventional wisdom surrounding the mummification of corpses. Some parts of the mother's body were also naturally mummified. The discovery made during an excavation between 1992 and 1997 by a team that included DOA experts and a German-based excavation team. According to Lama from the Department of Archaeology, 63 other bodies were also recovered from the same site. The Mehbrak Cave complex is assumed to have been a cave used for burial purposes, but it seems also that people were living there. So what do we have? Do we have a burial site? Or do we have a living site? Is it used first as a burial site and then as a living site? Or is it used as a living site and then used as a burial site? Or was it a place where people were living and then there's a terrible accident and people end up buried there? I think there's still a lot more work to be done on this one. Now, ancient burial mounds. We're back to them again. We never get far away from an ancient burial mound on these news stories. A prehistoric monument on Dartmoor, that's in Devon, has been restored to its previous condition after a stone had been removed for laboratory analysis. Beads, worked leather, cremated human remains have all been discovered in the kist or burial chamber at White Horse Hill after it was removed by Dartmoor National Parks Authority Archaeology and Conservation Works teams. There's a roughly 200 known kists on Dartmoor, all hidden beneath the ground or inserted deep into barrows. The White Horse kist, though, is unique, as it's the only known example set within a peat mound, first discovered 10 years ago when one of the side stones fell out of the mound. Over time, the peat has slowly eroded away, revealing more of the kist and its contents. After several failed attempts to protect it as a scheduled monument, both the Dartmoor National Parks Authority and English Heritage decided the only thing to do was to excavate it in order to recover any surviving archaeological and environmental information before it was lost forever. One of the stones that was excavated from Dartmoor has now been safely returned, while the contents of the kist remain a subject of scientific study at the Wiltshire Conservation Service Laboratory in Chippenham. Now, the pendant story. A pendant discovered last summer at the Erikids archaeological site in Zestoa, that's the Basque province of Spain, may be as old as 25,000 years, which would make it the oldest found at an open-air excavation site throughout the whole of the Iberian Peninsula. I think they're making a differentiation between open-air sites here and sort of cave sites. The stone is 9 centimetres long, has a hole through one end, and looks like it was used as a sharpening tool. Erikaids lies behind the spa bath town of Zestoa, which is just on the other side of the river of Urola. The University of the Basque Country has been carrying out excavations here summer after summer, together with students and researchers from this and other universities. Since 1998, they've uncovered 32 square metres. However, wait for it, there's another 8 hectares to go to actually complete the entire site, so I don't think they'll be finishing anytime soon. The team do not know what to expect, either about the chronology or the kinds of remains likely to be uncovered. Dating the site is very difficult, as there are hardly any organic remains. The earth is so acidic that it consumes almost everything, leaving only stone tools and plant fossils. Thus, there are very few means of dating certain finds. However, typological analysis can allow them to state that there were two main periods of human occupation in Erikaids. The first recent one being 25,000 years ago, which is the phase from when the pendant dates to, and the other older occupation from the early Stone Age, or the lower Paleolithic, between 500,000 to 150,000 years ago. That's a range of 350,000 years. So the team are currently undertaking tests in an effort to determine a more precise dating of that level. Good luck to them there. Now, carved on a black stone, the Tower of Babel stelae dates to 604 to 562 BCE. It's newly recorded in the collection of Martin Schoen, a businessman from Norway who owns the largest private assemblage formed in the 20th century. Consisting of 13,717 manuscripts and inscriptions spanning over 5,000 years, the collection also includes a large number of pictographic and cuneiform tablets, some of the earliest known written documents, spanning most of the written history of Mesopotamia, an area that sort of centres on modern Iraq. A total of 107 cuneiform texts dating from the Uruk period, about 5,000 years ago, all the way up to Persian period from 2,400 years ago, have now been translated by an international group of scholars and published in the book Cuneiform Royal Inscriptions and Related Texts in the Schoen Collection. The Tower of Babel stela clearly shows a tower and King Nebuchadnezzar II, who rules Babylon some 2,500 years ago. The first Babylonian king to rule Egypt, he is also famous for building the legendary Hanging Gardens, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. In the inscription, he's a standing figure and is portrayed with a royal conical hat, holding a staff in his left hand and a scroll, or perhaps a foundation nail, in his outstretched right hand. Calling himself the great restorer and builder of holy places, he also reconstructed Etemenakni, a seven-story, 90-metre-tall temple known as a ziggurat, dedicated to the god Marduk. According to Andrew George, a professor of Babylonian at the University of London and the editor of the book, the relief yields the only fourth certain representation of Nebuchadnezzar II himself. The inscription also depicts the Tower of Babylon, or Babel, as an elevation and plan, featuring a line drawing of the ground plan of the temple, and clearly identifies the tower as a great ziggurat of Babylon. Could this be, dun-dun-dun, the Tower of Babel? The inscription says, I made it the wonder of the people of the world. I raised its top to the heaven. I made the doors for the gates, and I covered it with bitumen and bricks. So says the inscription, read in a translation by me, and thank you to Professor George for the actual translation. I don't really know cuneiform. Now, finally, local archaeologists and volunteers are removing decades of dense overgrowth from prehistoric Native American earthworks in Indian Mounds Park, Quincy, Illinois. One of the best-preserved complexes still evident in the upper Mississippi River Valley. The project began in November and will continue into spring. The mounds and nearby earthworks date from 200 BCE to 1000 CE. The state may have had as many as 10,000 mounds, but now only about 500 are left, many of them, worryingly, on private land. Work has so far revealed a terraced embankment with an enclosure surrounding three of the mounds that was only hinted at in University of Chicago Archaeologist survey done back in the 1920s. Steve Taken, president of the Quincy-based North American Archaeological Institute, says that there are 23 mounds within Quincy Park system. They discovered one large major mound that was previously undocumented and the remnants of two to three other mounds. Concerned with the overall condition of the mounds and their long-term future, Taken led an effort to reclaim them beginning in 2009. Volunteers tried to assess the mounds, scaling ladders and trees to get the most accurate measurements. Even though they're protected, natural factors do take their toll, so says Dave Nolan of the Illinois State Archaeological Survey. One can only imagine what the terraced enclosure must have looked like as you approached it up and down the river along the Mississippi. It would have been visible for miles and been an awe-inspiring landmark. Nolan adds, people can now come to Quincy and view these spectacular earthen monuments in a manner closer to that which was envisioned by the original builders. I have to say that no Maya were involved. The reason I say that is I've been in recent arguments about, if you want some fun, type in Maya in Georgia. Seriously flawed cogitations about how the Maya come up into Southeast Americas and basically start building Maya pyramids and temples and terrace systems, etc. What we're actually really looking at, because yes, there are Maya artifacts up in the Southeast, just as our southeastern artifacts down in Maya lands as well, are extended trade networks and basically a cultural concept where mound building or building of large and larger platforms becomes prevalent around this area. You don't actually have to have the Maya coming into a place and building it. I mean, it's absolutely baffling and bizarre. A lot of misquoting, a lot of anger. Anyway, on that contentious note, one thing you can do is keep yourself up to date, of course, with Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com, and the beautiful Past Horizons website. The news is there every day, continuing on and on and on, and we have just revamped the shop. So if you're actually after archaeological tools, the best there are, then get yourself along to www.pasthorizons.com/shop. And good grief, I actually managed to make it to the end of this with only two bloopers, one including chickens. So apologies from me, and apologies from the chickens, and we'll be seeing you next week.